Still to this day, that hasn't happened. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Bold, Beautiful, Borderline podcast. My name is Lori, and guess who I'm here with today? It's Sarah.
Or is it Pippi Longstocking?
I was literally going to say, and she has the cutest little braids. Well, we're super excited to be recording together because this, as you know, has not happened as often this year as it has before, which has been actually like really interesting because we've got to know so many different people with BPD over the last year.
Oh my God, so many.
Yeah, it's been like fascinating. But we're super stoked to be able to record together. This rarely happens with our schedules. And so we were just kind of thinking like, what would be a good topic? And I know our Patreon folks had asked us to record an episode on seasonal depression, which I think is brilliant. And we're actually recording this like right as we kind of move into spring. And I remember like it's Saturday right now, like last week I was in a yoga class and I got out of the yoga class and I was like, oh, it's still sunny. And I was just like, my entire like life changed because like, I do really get affected by.
Oh my God. Same.
Seasons. Yeah. Do you want to,
I literally just texted Talon and was like, I feel like I was reborn today because the sunshine is out.
100%. And it's like, it's such a big difference all of a sudden, right? Is that because of the time change? I don't really understand how time changes.
So work. Yeah, I was actually thinking about that too, because the time change like hit me really hard this year, but I feel like I say that every year, like as someone who's like chronically exhausted, and I know you can relate because you're the same, like the time change this year just seriously effed me. And yesterday I had to cancel a couple of sessions to sleep. Like I slept until 1 o'clock in the afternoon. But obviously the benefit of the time change is that we get an hour back in the evening and it's been light out at night. And that's been giving me like evening joy instead of like taking my nap. Like I nap at like 1 to 3 and then I'll work and then I'll nap like 6 to 8 and then I'll get up. And so I'm like trying to ditch my 6 to 8 nap because, oh my God, it's light out and I want to go out into the world. And like,
totally.
I'm like,
and not mess up your sleep.
Bear coming out of hibernation.
Yeah. And isn't it just like the most glorious feeling? Like it's unreal. And I've never been diagnosed with seasonal affective disorder. I don't think many people are, to be perfectly honest with you.
I actually pulled up the stuff so we can diagnose you today.
Okay. Well, we can definitely do that. But just like really quick, I was, so I've been on Seroquel, which is an atypical antipsychotic for over 10 years, which is probably not like what you're supposed to do with those kinds of drugs. Anyways, and I'm also on Zoloft, and my dumbass self who has played this roller coaster so many times was like, I'm feeling really great. I'm going to get off all my meds. Don't do that, folks. That's a stupid idea.
Lori, you are so intelligent.
I know. I didn't do it for the record because I was like, oh yeah, that's how this goes every fucking time. So anyways, but
can I just tell you before you start, like a really funny follow-up to that?
Yeah.
So I saw my psychiatrist the other day, and like after like 5 years, we're finally down to only seeing each other every 90 days instead of every 30 days, which is,
wow, that's a big difference. Actually, that's like,
it's indicative of my progress for sure. And so we're like going over all my symptoms and yada, yada, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, you know, you're at the most stable place I've ever seen you. And then she was like, you know, tell me about like depression, and I gave her the rundown, right? Like, I've never been self-harm free in my life. Everybody is clear about that who listens to the podcast, but I was explaining like, you know, the frequency and how it's like reduced. And I was like, yeah, I'm probably only like cry hysterically like 4 days a week right now. And like, you know, like my suicidal thoughts are like more just like ruminating kind of like hopelessness. And she's so sweet. My care team is so great, but she was like, well, Sarah, you know, like you're still very high risk with your depression and we could look at changing your meds. And I was like, Megan, absolutely not. Like,
yeah, I'm actually doing real good. Thanks.
I'm literally like the most stable I've ever been in my entire life. And You have me at the max dose of Zoloft, and I've been on the max dose of Zoloft for years, and there's absolutely no way we are changing it. And of course, she's just like, you know, that's great. Sounds good.
Yeah.
But she was like, we might be able to get a little bit more benefit from something else. And I'm just like, it is not worth it to me to maybe have more benefit, to have the interim period be fucking bananas.
100%.
Like off once, and on and trying stuff. No, thank you.
Well, and like once you find medications that work for you, why fuck with it? Right. Like that's like me and Seroquel. Seroquel was prescribed to me the first time in an emergency room because I like needed to sleep. And it's been over 10 years. Like it's a medication that works for me. I don't really want to get rid of it. Out of curiosity, what is the max dose for Zoloft?
200 milligrams.
Okay. Cause I'm on 150, and I've actually heard really interesting things that at 200. There's a huge
benefit between 150 and 200. I think I told you that when you went from 100 to 150 as well.
Yeah.
Like once you get above 100, it really starts to like, ooh. But you know, here's the thing that I think like people who are like, God, what's a person-centered term for this? I kind of think like, mental health warm, you know what I mean? Is like people who definitely have depression, and I don't want to discredit that.
Right. But there it's kind of like low grade, basic.
Yeah, baby, we are on the Autobahn over here. Okay. Like, like it is, people do not understand that truly for you and I, it is not worth it to search for that possibility that our symptoms could be even more reduced because it's so dangerous in the interim period. And like, are you on an antipsychotic and have been for 10 years? Yes. Is that potentially dangerous to some of your organs? 100%. What is more dangerous though, is you coming off of them. And people who like, don't have the lived experience of walking around in borderline shoes every day, don't get that. And I need these people to not give us fucking advice anymore. Okay.
Totally. Yeah. No. And like for me, it's such a struggle, right? Because Seroquel has been like a huge positive. Like Seroquel DBT, many different things, my friends, whatever, have kept me literally alive and out of jail and the ground, right? Like I'm not discrediting Seroquel in any sense, but there is a point at which in my life I would love to be able to sleep without relying on a medication, right? And so anyways, long story short, I went to my nurse practitioner, who is like basically my family doctor, and I was like, this was in, I want to say in September, and I was like, so I'm like kind of thinking that I want to try and like get off at least some of my meds. Like I'm just feeling like I'm, you know, I'm 29. I feel like I'm taking more meds than I want to be like, and I, you know, I think I have the skills to be able to like manage this and like realize if I need to go back on. And she was like, oh, okay, great.
And I just say you'd probably be masturbating so much.
That is part of like, there are physical issues with mental health medications that are really annoying. And like, that is one of them, right? Like, you know, and so there's reason that I want to at least.
Lori's like, I'm trying to jump into the ocean. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, I have really bad temperature regulation, like horrible. And I get like really bad night sweats. Like it's like awful. And I'm 100% sure that's related to my medications. And like, it's that kind of thing where I'm like, I don't want to like, anyways, long story short, the side effects, I'm getting to the point where I'm kind of like, I want to see what I can explore about like safely getting off my medications. So in, I think September, I went to my nurse practitioner and I was like, hey, like I'm thinking about getting off my medications. And she was like, okay, cool. Like we can totally talk about that in the spring. She was like, there is no fucking way that you are going to get off your medications in the winter. She's like, you know what? Like at the end of the day, it's your decision, but I will say this to you. I have yet to see a patient who has successfully gotten off their mental health medications in the winter. She's like, it's just so much harder and I don't want to set you up for failure. And I was
such a like beautiful, well-rounded approach.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
Very whole like system. I like that. She's a social worker also?
I don't think so, but she's great. And like, she was just like, look, at the end of the day, it's your call and I'm going to support what you want to do. My professional opinion is do not do this in the winter. And in hindsight, like now that I get to the other side of the winter and we're in here in March, I'm kind of like, I don't even know if I want that anymore. Like it's funny because I've actually been considering now going back and asking for an increased dose of Zoloft, because apparently a higher dose of Zoloft can actually really benefit OCD like symptoms, which
yes, is something that I'm struggling with. It's the drug SSRI that treats both depression and compulsive anxiety behavior, which we would lump OCD into.
But Seroquel is still debating. I can't wait until you're ready
to talk about that. Oh, can't wait.
Yeah, I'm.
I have been meaning to tell you.
Yeah.
Are we allowed to talk about that for like 1 second?
Yeah, totally.
Oh, okay. I have been meaning to tell you that, like, I thought I wasn't anxious because you are so anxious. And then I am anxious and you are compulsive. And like, there's a difference.
Yeah. I mean, I was
obviously compulsivity has it is anxiety, right? But like it manifests so differently. And I'm just like, oh my God, I thought I wasn't anxious. And then I get my chart notes and I have social anxiety disorder and generalized anxiety disorder. And I was like, realizing as I leave my apartment and I'm spending more time at Talon's house where there's people, I am like so profoundly anxious and I didn't know it because I locked myself in my van or in my apartment on my own for 2 years and I didn't have to deal with anyone.
It's funny. I actually saw your social anxiety diagnosis in that Instagram post you made the other day. And I was like, huh, that's super interesting because you are kind of avoidant of social interaction, which makes it feel like you're not socially anxious because you're just not putting yourself in that position.
It's a coping mechanism. And I didn't realize that until the last 2 years.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, I can't remember who I was talking to about this. It might've been on a podcast episode with you even, but like the interesting thing about you and I is like, we both have so many similarities in terms of our mental health diagnoses on paper, but how they present is so incredibly different. Like your depression is so profound. Different. And my anxiety is like fucking off the charts.
Oh my God, it's unreal. I can't even imagine. Like living with depression to me is not that hard because like,
well,
I'm just waiting for the train to get to the station, y'all.
Yeah.
I can't bring myself to care even half as much as Lori cares. And so like that piece of it for me, I'm just like, oh my God, Lori must be going so bananas in her head because she cares so much.
Well, and the, like, this is me regulated with anxiety and medicated, right? And gone through therapy for however long, like,
right.
Like my anxiety internally is so distressing that I don't think that I don't do a good job of expressing how distressing it is because I just like can't deal. And so like this kind of like self-exploration of like potentially this obsessive compulsive, you know, like I have not been diagnosed with OCD and I don't want to pretend that I have. But the more I look into it, the more I'm like, holy shit, that is very much what I'm experiencing.
Oh, absolutely.
But what's funny about what you said though, is you were like, you have all these compulsions. And when I think about OCD, that's the part that I actually don't resonate with is the compulsion part. I think
it's because it's so built into your life though, like compulsively checking your calendar, compulsively counting and responding to emails.
Yeah, totally. Asking people if they hate me, if they love me, blah, 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 blah. And like, I think, it's just really interesting. Like that was always the part of OCD that I didn't resonate with. But as I kind of go through this journey of self-exploration, it becomes a little bit more obvious that there are these things. They just don't present as what like TV tells you OCD presents as, which is obviously not accurate. But, like I'm not washing my hands 24 hours a day. Like I'm not. And I know people that have OCD like that, where like their hands are like bleeding all the time because they're washing their hands so much.
So devastating.
Right. So it's like, it's just like that different image of OCD that I'm not used to
familiar
thinking
with.
About.
To be honest, like I don't think I really even understood it until last summer where we almost broke up because like my ADHD and your compulsive behavior around the things that we have to co-collaborate like on were like literally, it was like civil war, it felt like, you know? And that was when I really understood like one, how severe my ADHD was and I didn't know. And two, how severe your need for order and predictability was.
Yeah, I think predictability is huge. And like, and just like some essence of, I don't know, like, I guess, yeah, like, I guess that order or like the predictability is something that like the anxiety can hang on and be like, well, at least we know what's going to happen next.
Right.
Right. It's like we can panic about what's going to happen next, but at least we can know what's going to happen next, you know?
And I was actually going to say that because it's so funny. We do on paper have so many of the same diagnoses. And like, obviously, neither one of us wants to promote the stigma that everybody with a similar mental health disorder like presents the same.
Our podcast is an example of how that's not true. We are not only you and I, but everybody single guest we've ever had. Yeah.
But I also think it's like a very big, I wish I could take my ADHD away because then I think we could more clearly look at you and I as if we are similar or aren't similar, because that's just so disruptive to things like behaviorally for me. But I think just like how different our traumas have been has really changed the way that we interact and adapt and have maladaptive or adaptive behaviors. Like, we've both had a ton of trauma, but it's been so profoundly different.
Oh yeah. Not even comparable. Like
there's hardly any overlap in trauma, which is like interesting, other than like your typical, like, I'm a woman in the world trying to like, we all know what that means.
Yeah.
Like,
look behind you every 5 seconds and whatever. But
like our family childhood traumas were so different that like, to me, I think that's a big part of why we are so different. And like, to be honest, I didn't understand truly how avoidant I was until this year. Like, I am like, it's unfortunate, but I am like so fucking avoidant.
Yeah. Long story short. Yeah, totally. And like, I think that's probably where that social anxiety piece, like it, that is your coping mechanism. So therefore you don't like realize it. Whereas like people would not believe that I have social anxiety, but I have social anxiety. Like every time I have to go to somebody's house or a conference or like have dinner with somebody, I like literally like get the shits. No joke. Like my entire body panics to the point where I have problems because I'm like, I just can't be around humans and have interactions with humans without being so anxious the entire time. And the good and bad is that I've kind of grown up in a family where it was like, I don't fucking care, deal with it. And so there wasn't the ability for that isolation because it was like, I don't care, go anyway, and just be incredibly uncomfortable for your entire life, which is good, but I wouldn't recommend.
It's not like, compassionate.
No,
right?
I was going to say, you need that with the compassion. I think.
And that's the difference between, I think like, if that's a key difference between our childhoods is like, my parents are so profoundly avoidant. It is unreal. And the family, when my first uncle died by suicide, the family pretty much imploded. I mean, people were calling and screaming at each other and we were disinvited from Thanksgiving. And, you know, my mom didn't talk to some of her siblings for, you know, like a very long time. And like people don't understand when the holidays come around. I'm like, listen, like there's not a family get together, y'all. Like I will only see my family members at the next funeral. So like, that's normal for me, that avoidance.
Totally.
Yeah, should we talk seasonal depression? Say what you're going to say.
Literally thinking the same thing. I was like, I'm really enjoying this conversation, but this has absolutely nothing to do with seasonal depression. But to be honest, are our listeners surprised? Probably.
Well, no. And like, and we just haven't like done a you and me episode in so long. I've just been like craving your sweet little face. I'm just like, I need fucking Lori in my life.
Oh my God.
Your That's teeth so look perfect, by the way.
Thank you. They don't feel perfect. I had like the worst dentist appointment of my life the other day and it was so traumatic. I was like, I can't do this now. They're going to have to drug me every time I go to the dentist.
Speaking of avoidant.
You haven't been to the dentist in like 5 years. 10 years.
10 years.
I was like, you can't see her, but she's nodding.
10 years. And like Tori had made like a wife like dentist appointment for us and was like, "You're fucking going, bitch." And I was like, "Yeah, yeah, yeah, okay." And COVID hit and they canceled everything. And I'm like, "Hallelujah."
Yeah.
Okay. Seasonal affective disorder affects about 5% of adults in the US, starts in young adulthood. I should pull up some Pacific Northwest. We're very at risk.
Well, you live in Florida versus you live in British Columbia or whatever, Washington, like that's going to be a very different experience.
Yeah. And isn't it worse for you further up from me too? Like it's very cold there.
It's really not. People think that it's really cold. Like people will be like, "Oh, like there's snow everywhere. There's igloos." Like we have essentially the same climate as you.
Okay. All right.
Like, I mean, like, don't get me wrong.
The same
like,
amount of rain as we do in Portland.
We probably get more.
Okay. See, that's why I think it's also worse for you. Cause the rain really does it for me.
The rain is awful. Keep in mind though,
no light.
Yeah. And it can rain for like months at a time with no break. Right. Which probably happens there too, but keep in mind that like British Columbia is a giant province and I live at I live like 3 minutes away from the US border.
Okay.
I
was in Whidbey when you were in Mexico and I was pissed. I'm like, bitch, I'm like a hop, skip and a jump from you, but you were in fucking Mexico.
Where's Whidbey?
Whidbey Island is in like the San Juans.
Oh yeah. My dad goes there sometimes.
Dude, I was like 2 hours from you.
Well, Aaron got his Nexus.
I don't know what that means. Is that a passport?
Oh, really?
I've never heard that word.
Oh, weird. It's like a fast pass passport. Like it like helps you go through the border quicker.
Okay. So now we can come down and apply for my passport. Maybe I can come up for that walk. That would be so cool. Okay. We have like 5 minutes. So seasonal affective disorder affects women more than men. Again, I don't know if that's true or if women are just talking about it more, but about 10 to 20% of Americans have a milder form of the winter blues of this that we consider the winter blues.
Sorry, what was that number?
10 to 20% of folks in America have
that seems low, but we'll give it that.
I agree. Okay. So people who are at risk are those in cloudy regions, ding, ding, ding. People who are far north of the equator, ding, ding, ding. People who have depression or mental health conditions, ding, ding, ding. And people who have a mood disorder, such as major depressive disorder or bipolar disorder.
So seasonal affective disorder is triggered by the seasons and usually when fall starts. That's what we were talking about when it was like, my nurse practitioner was like, please do not have your medication change at this time. So it's saying that the difference between this winter blues and that seasonal affective disorder is that seasonal affective disorder affects your daily life. Whereas like, I guess the winter blues is just kind of like being bummed a little bit. So let me look for the symptoms here. So symptoms, seasonal affective disorder is a type of depression. SAD is officially classified as a major depressive disorder with seasonal patterns. So if you have seasonal affective disorder and you have mood changes or symptoms of depression, this can include, sadness, which feeling depressed most of the day, almost every day, anxiety, carbohydrate cravings, and weight gain. That's really interesting because I have been having the worst carbohydrate cravings of my life this winter. Like it's absolutely awful. I can't, and I'm not like a no carb person, but it's like, I can't deal with not eating carbs 100% of the time. Extreme fatigue and lack of energy. I think that's something that people with BPD have a lot anyways, just by the nature of how our lives are. Hopelessness and worthlessness. Trouble concentrating, being irritated and agitated, limbs that feel heavy. That's an interesting one. Loss of usual pleasurable activities, including withdrawing, sleeping problems. They say usually oversleeping, but I guess that could be undersleeping as well, or having hard time sleeping, thoughts of death or suicide, which again, a BPD experience. I don't know anybody who hasn't been having constant thoughts of death or suicide in their entire life, but it is what it is. And then there's also people who have summer SAD, which is interesting. So sorry, that summer seasonal affective disorder may experience agitation and restlessness, anxiety, decreased appetite and weight loss, episodes of violent behavior, trouble sleeping, like insomnia. Interesting. I guess it makes sense though, that you would have like that's almost like a manicier, that's not a word, but more manic kind of symptoms compared to the depression symptoms of seasonal affective disorder. And I guess that's why it's just seasonal affective disorder, not seasonal affective depression, because it could go either way. So there's different causes naturally for this kind of thing. So biological clock change, so that's just like the sunlight changing, vitamin D deficiency. Apparently in like the Pacific Northwest, like every single person is vitamin D deficient. And what's super funny is that I take vitamin D supplements and I take like way more than I'm supposed to. And Aaron, I always like make him take his vitamins too, just because I'm like, dude, you're going to be vitamin D deficient. You may as well take some. And he always mocks me for how many I take. And then I had a doctor's appointment the other day where they did blood work and they're like, oh, like, are you taking vitamin D supplements? And I was like, yeah. And they're like, are you still taking like whatever? I can't remember the number. And I was like, yeah. They're like, okay, well, if you could up that, you're still vitamin D deficient. And I was like, great. Okay. So that was a good one to make fun of Aaron about. So I guess vitamin D is important because your serotonin level also gets a boost from vitamin D. So that's an interesting one. I don't personally find that I notice a big difference when I take vitamin D, but I just do it because I know that it's better for you. And then brain chemical imbalance can also affect it. Melatonin. I know a lot of people that take melatonin, and that's one of the things that one of my doctors had said might be helpful for the like switch from Seroquel to the switch from Seroquel, like off of Seroquel, is to take melatonin kind of like every other day or like half and half. I haven't started doing that yet, but something I'm considering. And then just like the amount of negative thoughts in the winter. So those are all kind of a little bit about seasonal affective disorder. As many of you who have listened to this podcast know, I am like obsessed with Sad Lamps, which, or Happy Light is the brand. We can put a link in the bio or the show notes for that. But basically it's called light therapy, and it's lights that you can buy that imitate like the sunlight, and it can really help. So again, like there's certain things in the world where people are just like, is that true? And I swear it works super well. So this year I wasn't as good about it, and that might be why I kind of felt like even more exhausted, but I usually have a Sad Lamp like next to my bed on a timer so that it wakes me up. And then you're supposed to use them, I want to say, for like 20 to 30 minutes a day. I usually use them from like 7 a.m. to 2 p.m. So I just have them sitting at my desk. I think I literally own 4 of them. And personally, I find them incredibly helpful. You can also like often find them on Facebook Marketplace. So I would recommend, like, if you're looking for something for a little bit cheaper, check there. That said, like, they're not overly expensive. Like, I think you can probably get one for like $40, maybe. So anyways, worth checking out if you're experiencing seasonal affective disorder, and you're welcome to reach out or check the link, in the show notes about like what type I use. And then there's kind of the general treatments for depression, like cognitive behavioral therapy, antidepressants, the vitamin D supplements that we talked about before, and then just spending more time outdoors. So as we were talking about before, like the need to get more sunlight in your life, which is obviously more difficult during the winter. And I think, well, we're moving in theory in a little bit. And one of the really big benefits of that is that my office space will have a window, because I find it makes such a big difference to my like mood and my productivity if I have sunlight entering where I'm working. Luckily, like I'm super lucky that I work like a regular kind of 9-to-5 job. So at least my sleep schedule isn't like super impacted by that. But I do have to really prioritize getting, like going out for walks during the day, because, you know, in the winter, 9-to-5, it's dark when I start, it's dark when I'm done. And yeah, I just really need that additional movement, and natural sunlight. I'm just trying to think if there's anything else. Oh yeah, I would not recommend using your sad lamp in the evening, because it does really help wake you up. And it's not something that you want to mess with, in my opinion. So I usually stop using mine around like noon to 2 p.m. ish. And then I'm really careful about not turning it on after that. Just trying to think. This site, the Cleveland Clinic, is talking a little bit about different antidepressants that can be helpful for seasonal affective disorder. And a lot of them are ones that many of us are probably already taking. So like Prozac, Lexapro, Paxil, Zoloft, and Celexa. But obviously, like speaking to your doctor about that, I would be surprised if doctors are prescribing SSRIs in like just for seasonal depression compared to like you have kind of, you're using them the whole time. Cause it takes like about 6 weeks, in my opinion, to like really kind of get up to speed with like an SSRI. And so I wouldn't want to,
Like up to 90 days sometimes.
Is it? Okay. Yeah. I know like 6 weeks is like the kind of the minimum. So like when people say like, I took an SSRI and it's like perfectly working for me, it's like, well, that's like not actually true. Like that's a placebo. Happy for your placebo. Placebos are super important and valid, but it actually takes more time. So I don't know, would you have seen clients of yours, Sarah, that are like taking an SSRI just in the winter?
Say a minimum of like 2 months, but more like three to see if you can get benefit from it.
Totally. But are they taking it just in the winter? Cause I'm just looking at the Cleveland Clinic and it's saying that like sometimes medications will be prescribed for sad. And I'm like, I don't know if people would do that. Cause like
maybe like Prozac or like a starter SSRI. I definitely know that people are increasing their SSRIs in the winter.
Right. Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But I do think like, because it's so hard to find a psychiatrist here, people are going to their PCPs and PCPs will prescribe like Prozac or like a really like low dose starting antidepressant. I don't know if it's like written into a treatment plan that it's like directly for seasonal affective disorder, because physical health doctors like PCPs just like hear people say they're depressed and are like, okay, well, I'm feel okay about it. If you are, I'll give you Prozac.
Yeah. Cause like everybody takes Prozac, so it doesn't really matter. That's how I feel about Celexa. It did not work for me, but like, I feel like that's just every doctor. That's their first line of defense, or at least it was like probably five.
I've never
years
been
ago.
Prescribed it.
Really? Cipralam or whatever?
Oh, citalopram. No, citalopram. I've never been prescribed it. It has a ton of side effects for people. So I think it's not used as often anymore. But back in the day, big time.
Oh yeah. It was the first one I was on when I was probably 12 or 14. And I had like a horrible time with it. And then it was one of those things where I would be like prescribed it and then I would stop taking it and then they would prescribe it again. And I was like, I swear this is like impacting my skin and I'm getting really bad acne and like, I'm not feeling good. And they'd be like, those aren't symptoms, blah, 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 blah. So basically I just like refuse to take them anymore. It's like Vyvanse, which I know has been super helpful for you. Like, I don't care what a doctor says about that medication for me. I will not take it. Like, it's not safe.
Well, there's absolutely no reason for you to take it either.
Well, they use it for binge eating disorder, actually.
They do. But yeah, I think that's probably going to start going away with Ozempic and Mounjaro and those kinds of meds being more available.
Yeah, maybe. But I mean, like, I've been offered to take Vyvanse for binge eating and I'm just like, absolutely fucking not. Like, I almost died. Like, I can't. But are you still taking it?
Uh-huh.
40 milligrams. It's going every day. So well for you.
Literally has made my life 100 times better. I can still like take a nap within 2 hours of taking it, which people think is wild. Because like people with ADHD, it will keep them up for like 2 days, but yeah, it's great.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah. I don't like medications are such a fascinating thing. Hey, cause like in theory, we're all human and we all have like similar brains, but like at the end of the day, there's just things that don't work for people. And yeah, anyways,
Well, and like going back to the Vyvanse thing, like stimulants are not healthy drugs to prescribe for eating disorder behavior. It's just the only thing that's been prescribed because it's been the only thing that will reduce appetite, but it's not effective. And that's why I'm like really hopeful about all of the research that's coming out right now, specifically around like obesity and compulsive binge eating and how it is genetically passed down. I think that it's going to be really interesting in the health field the next couple of years to follow. Hopefully they'll be pulling people off of stimulants and be prescribing more effective drugs specific to reducing binge eating.
Yeah, totally. And also like the fact that, yeah, it's not just like a, you're just not, you're too weak to not eat. It's like, no, no, no. Or not like, does that make sense? You don't have the self-control to not eat.
Right. And no, it's like, literally genetics.
Yeah. And you're like, no, 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 no. That's not how it is. Yeah, super interesting stuff. I actually am reading a book, which I never do. And I'm not reading it very quickly, but it's a book called, You Just Need to Lose Weight and 10 Other Myths About Fat People. It's an awesome book by the host of, Maintenance Phase, which if you don't listen to that podcast, I would highly recommend. It's so good. And actually two queer people are the hosts and it's just like, it's fantastic. And at the end of every chapter, they have discussion questions about like the research around obesity. And I've been thinking about doing like a mini Patreon thing of like talking through those discussion questions. But anyways, one of those things where I have so many brilliant ideas and then no time to execute them. So
yeah. Our lives. I missed a little bit of the seasonal affective disorder chat because I got kicked out of my room at the library. So
all good, you guys all good.
Hear me, that's why.
We went over the symptoms and then talked a little bit about like what can be helpful. So I was talking about like how I'm obsessed with sad lamps and how they're super beneficial.
Okay. I don't think mine does anything for me.
Really?
I don't feel a difference. And I think that thing is on 12 hours a day.
Well, that was what I said also when you were getting kicked out was you're supposed to use it like 15 minutes a day. And I definitely use it like 12 or not 12, maybe like 9, but yeah, that's interesting. Cause I like, it works really well for me. It works really well for Aaron. But I mean, again, none of this is a one size fits all.
Yeah, for sure. I think like the thing that's like the most helpful for me is moving my body.
Oh, totally. So,
like if I'm not moving my body in the winter time, I'm so much more likely to get depressed. And it's been super hard this year because I'm having a really bad flare up with my
back
disc issues. And I'm like back to seeing the chiropractor twice a week and, you know, all of this stuff. And they've like gotten me off of pretty much all high impact movement. So I'm starting to swim and I'm hoping that swimming will be like the thing that keeps my depression going. But like in the winter, it's super hard to move our bodies because everybody's at the gym. So it's overwhelming to think about going. Then there's all of the New Year's diet fad stuff. That's like very triggering. You can't move your body outside very easily unless you want to be a wet dog, you know?
Totally. Do you find that swimming, like because it's indoors, is still beneficial? Cause I find like for me, obviously moving my body just generally is incredibly important for my mental health, regardless of the, like where it is or what it is. But I find like, if I, even if it's freezing cold, raining, like even if I can get outside a little bit, it's like much more beneficial than being inside.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's just harder for me to motivate myself.
Oh, 1000%.
Yeah. But yes, you're, yeah. Like, I mean, like I'm trying to snowboard once a week and it's not because it's good for my back, but it's because like I have to be outdoors. And like I'm lucky that I have a big dog that has to be walked and she has to play ball twice a day or we are batshit. So like that's helpful for me. But if I had to self-motivate this year, I wouldn't have compared to last year's. Like my motivation this year is just so low.
Yeah, I do really like that about dogs. Like it, when I dog sit and stuff like that, I'm just like, oh, the like external need to go for a walk, because I love walking. It's my favorite thing ever. But am I going to motivate myself to do it? Probably not. Right. And so, yeah, just like, even if you have to take a dog out for like 20 minutes, well, then you're already outside. So you may as well walk for an hour. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so much better than, trying to motivate yourself. I wanted Mr. Norris to be like a cat on a leash person. And
what about like a cat backpack?
I have a cat backpack, but that's not the same. Cause it's like, it's not, he has to go out. Like, he's not really enjoying himself. He's just going for a walk. So anyways, that was short lived.
Well, seasonal affective disorder. We did it.
We mostly did it. I don't know how that episode went on so many tangents, but that's our life.
Not surprising.
No, not surprised at all. Your hair looks
so good. I love this length on you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. It grew quickly. Hey, like, it's a little bit of that annoying length where it's like, it flips, you know, when it hits your shoulder. So I'm kind of excited for like 2 inches longer where it doesn't do that anymore, but I bought a blowout brush, like the, you know, the like ones that are like hair dryers, and that is life changing. I'm never going back.
Hmm.
So,
okay. But can we just like acknowledge the Mary Kate and Ashley, like big hair flip from back in the day? Like
there are days where that's what it looks like. And I'm like, I can't.
I remember my mom, like with the curl, like the brush, that's like a, like 360, you know, and she would like curl the bottom of my hair with the blow dryer under it to try to get the flip.
Oh, from
like the Mary Kay and Ashley, was it Island in the Sun? I don't know.
Something like that.
Yeah. One of the ones where they're like in the Bahamas. Yeah. Anyways.
Well, and then you're also obviously, you obviously did the like hair on the ground with the iron to straighten it. Like,
oh, on the, I was talking about this last night. Like I literally put my head on an ironing board that was like circa 1985, turned the iron all the way up and had the mister on and just prayed to a God that I didn't get my neck.
Yeah. Like, correct me if
young people like don't get that.
I was gonna say, I was like, because
we don't understand that we didn't have a ceramic flat iron by Qi in 2001.
Yeah, like, our mom and our sister, it was very
expensive. We couldn't afford it.
Did they exist?
Like when I was ironing my hair with an iron on an ironing board with like a blue duck on it, like that's how old this ironing board was. They were starting to exist, but like it wasn't common enough that I was going to be able to convince my mom to buy me a $60 flat iron.
No, I guess that's what it is. Cause I was like, somebody, like celebrities weren't lying on the floor ironing their hair like that, right? Like, I mean, maybe they were. But you know what's so funny is like, think about me with my hair. This is naturally this straight. And I still laid on the ground. And had my mom and my sister iron my fucking hair.
I did it myself. And then my mom walked in on me like too many times. And she took me immediately to Sally's and like got me the cheapest ceramic flat iron. Cause she was like, no more.
That's a good way to do it.
Like my hair is not the same texture as yours. My hair is wavy and it's only wavy now because I've like done so much to it over the years. When I was little, it was like frizzy curly, like not like ringlet curls, but like curls.
Yeah, I think your hair has way more texture than mine does for sure.
I would like sit there for like an hour with my head upside down, no mirror on like the ceiling to look. Oh my God. The fact that I didn't like permanently injure myself is
how did we not accidentally like burn all of our hair off? You know what I mean? Like that to me is bizarre.
I'm not convinced I didn't. Like, oh, I think I remember like a little chunk here and there just kind of melting off.
Oh my God. So freaking funny. Hey,
so wild. But yeah, like that's how like I know that we are old is like, I don't want to be like kids these days, but like kids these days, you weren't ironing your hair. And like, I know that you think that the baggy jean thing is cute, but like I had to walk to the bus stop and home in pouring down rain 3 months of year with sopping.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Praying jeans because they were dragging in the mud.
Yeah.
So like you guys, enough with the baggy jeans.
I don't
agree with it. I'm not getting back on board.
I have vivid memories of these jeans that I had that were like baggy like that, like flared out, but they were hot pink for the bottom like foot. And so, but like, yeah, at the end of the day, the entire like foot and a half, whatever foot of it, the pink bit was just soaking wet.
And like gray and brown from
like muddy. It's like, guys, why are we doing this? I don't want to do this anymore. And now freaking Crocs are back, apparently, like actually in style. Like, I know people wear Crocs. My best friend is going to kill me because she's obsessed with Crocs, but I know people wear Crocs. That ain't
for me.
But apparently they're like actually popular again, like to wear outside, like not like, yeah. In the shower.
I don't know. I've never had style and I'm never going to have style. So like, that's okay. But like,
I mean, I feel like you're pretty stylish.
I don't agree, but.
Oh, you pull it off well. I don't know. You seem stylish.
I think I have a vibe that works for me. Yeah, so people disregard that my clothes don't match and I wear the same thing every day and like whatever. But I cannot get down with the baggy jeans. I cannot get down with the platform shoes that are coming back.
Yep. I mean, I can't just because I'm too tall, to be honest. It's just not for me.
And one of my teenagers came to session the other day with butterfly clips in her
hair.
And like pretty soon these kids are going to have lip smackers on a bracelet.
Yeah, 100%. Oh my God.
No.
Butterfly clips.
Yeah.
Like
blue eyeshadow.
Oh, the good old days. I can't do it. Although I did see that you posted a thing about Simple Plan today. And I was like, I'm still obsessed with Simple Plan.
I know all of the words to these songs that are like so problematic.
Yeah. I try to just ignore
like Simple Plan wasn't really that. They were like, but like Say Anything, the Red Jumpsuit Apparatus, like some of these bands that I know all of the words to. And I think back to like my 14-year-old self saying these things. I'm just like,
yeah,
I'm like, everything makes sense.
And you're like, oh, why? Like when you were a kid, or at least my mom was like, we can't listen to that. And now I'm like, yeah, fair enough, bitch. Like I wouldn't have let my kids listen to that either. Like, are you freaking kidding me? Oh my God.
Hi, friends. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Bold, Beautiful, Borderline podcast. Lori and I are so grateful that you're here with us on this journey, and we can't wait to dive into more topics in the future with you all about borderline and even have some more fun and exciting guests to join us on the podcast. If you really enjoyed this episode, we would love if you would rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. We would also love to see you interact with us on social media and on our Patreon page. The links to that are included in the show notes, so check us out there. We would be incredibly honored to get to know you all as you get to know us and our recovery stories. We love you, and we'll see you next time.